JC2S, Part 1. Number 7A.
All right, so therefore you can see how Mrs. Eddy is interpreting then this scriptural text where the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till the whole was leavened. Wonderful point that Jesus brought out, of which is the role here of this chapter. So the kingdom of heaven, which we see is the reign of harmony, which is divine science, that realm of omnipotent mind, the one valued logic of spirit, and the balance of soul there, of identity, that kingdom of heaven now is likened unto a leaven. Now, what is leaven? If we look on page 118:24, which we just read, we see then that 11 on 24, she says, 11 is as yeast changes the chemical properties of meal. That's what 11 is. 11 changes the chemical property of meal. Meal remains the same, doesn't it? It's the meal. But what does 11 do? Called a yeast, it changes the meal. It changes the chemical properties of the meal. So the substance remains the same, but the leaven is changing it. It takes that substance and changes its consistency. So you see, the meal remains meal, but the meal is being changed into something else, from one form into another form. It's going through a reformation. I always like to give an example of that reforming process that goes on to really show the changing that goes on. We certainly see it in making bread, the changing that goes on within a meal, from what we start out with, the dough, into the bread itself. But if you just think in life experience and examples, I like to take that example of the caterpillar, and how that caterpillar goes through its leavening process, so to speak, its changing process, its reforming process, its process of a caterpillar then going into its cocoon, or pupa, it's called, where it changes into a butterfly. That is, you see, the change, it's the same thing that goes through a process, always remaining the same thing, but as it goes through the process, a diviner form, a different form comes out. So yes, it still is the caterpillar, but in that process of change, the restructuring that goes on, something is happening in that rechanging process to bring out its higher identity. It's just that retranslation of the 3 degrees, isn't it? As just all these are just examples, because we know that the scriptural note is the 3 degrees. That's that retranslation, goes through 3 stages, 3 degrees, from the physical through the mental into the spiritual. That's the changing of a substance of something. That's the changing of a science. It goes through the change from the physical to the mental explanation to the spiritual explanation, but it remains science. But it takes on a different form, doesn't it? Just like a caterpillar remains a caterpillar, it is that. But in its going through that pupa stage, its cocooning stage, it begins to change into something else, which is a caterpillar. So you can see how that second degree of change is very, very important. That's the point we know we resist. But the Christ is crisis friendly, change friendly, second degree friendly. We now know that through this evolution through fluctuation, or evolution through changes, evolution through restructuring, how important that second degree of the wilderness period is. How when we come out of Egypt, we must go through the wilderness of the second degree, through that transitional degree into the promised land. That is that leavening process. Now, we know that Abraham resisted that at first. He went from Ur right into the promised land. He had to go back in the promised land and come through the restructuring period of the second degree. He could not just go right in. It wasn't successful. He had to go back again. That is to show that the second degree of that transitional stage is very, very important. And that's always the stage that we resist, don't we? That's where the crisis comes along and we chemicalize. We, in the past, because we're learning this, I think we all are beginning to learn in our lives now. We've been in it long enough what this crisis-friendly situation is about. That instead of resisting now that second degree and calling it evil, oh my goodness, evil has come into my life. There's a change. It's evil. Or it's animal magnetism. We see now through the laws of the Christ that what we call evil is just good not understood. What we call animal magnetism is just the Christ not understood. Now, therefore, that is an important period, that pupa period or the cocooning period or the wilderness period. It's at that period where we either let the Christ move us forward, we don't resist the change and we go forward without suffering, we go through forward into the land of our true identity, into the higher order, into the new experience. That has to come out. We would not be in a crisis if the Christ wasn't bringing us something higher, something new, something else. It wasn't bringing us the promised land. We're in the crisis because the Christ made us do it, made us be there. As Paul says, I'm in the bonds of Christ. I'm in this dungeon because the Christ put me here for a reason, to bring out a higher order, to bring out some greater thing. I must tell the Romans, or I must tell in Corinth. So you see that that is a very, very creative, very, very important period to the Christ. To the human standpoint, when it doesn't understand that that restructuring period is demanding us to look forward and to go over the promise, over the River Jordan, into the promised land. Don't look back. Don't be turned to salt. Go forward. The danger then is always at that period is to murmur, like the children of the will in the wilderness. Murmur, 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 and then go back to the wanting to go back to the flesh pots of Egypt, to go back into the old paradigm, go back into the old standpoint. And so we see that that is what Marshall McLuhan called the rear view mirror society, going forward, looking backwards all the time. Oh, how I wish things were as they were. Oh, how I wish they were this way. And then suffering all the way because things are not the way they are and being mad about it and then trying to make things the way they are and just keep being expelled out of Egypt and not liking it. That's the suffering, not wanting to go forward. So usually the suffering is not conscious. If it was conscious, we would get rid of it. We now know enough of Christian Science that we would not resist the forward development. We know enough that the Christ now is kicking us to go forward. We've got to turn forward. We must welcome the higher order. We must be willing to rush through the River Jordan into the Promised Land, welcoming this new higher experience. But if it was that easy, we would do it. We would run across the river into the promised land, saying, let me get out of this restructuring period as fast as I can. But you see, that isn't what resists. It isn't these conscious things. It's the subconscious and unconscious beliefs in that morphogenetic field. See, that's still that second degree. That's where it's happening. And we're coming out of the first degree of mortal mind through the second degree of the human mind into the third degree of the divine mind. Well, that second degree then is sometimes influenced by the first degree, sometimes influenced by the third degree of the promised land coming upon us. That's why Mrs. Eddy says of the second degree, thoughts are neutral. They're sometimes influenced as evil thoughts or sometimes by divine thoughts, but thought themselves are neutral. Now, in that realm of thought is that morphogenetic field. Now, there are, as we see, many beliefs in there that don't want to go forward, that we aren't conscious of. You know, they say that maybe we're only conscious of 10% of our actions, that maybe 90% are much more happen through subconscious or unconscious archetypic myths, thinking us. What myth are we living? Joseph Campbell, certainly a big whale in mythology, in that mental realm of mythology, asking us, well, what myth are we living? showing that a great percentage of our actions comes from mythology, which we see now as imagination, beliefs, coming from heredity, family beliefs. So those things, those beliefs don't want to go forward. The astrological beliefs of the mental realm that want to lay claim on our identity in the mental realm, they don't want to go forward. They don't want to give up the astrological nature within man. You see, so this whole, all these beliefs, they're keeping, and they're unconscious, subconscious and unconscious. That's why we suffer mainly because of this, they're trying to impede our forward development. That's why we have to go out from science and how this divine mind handles the mental, handles the physical realm. It's only from this throne of grace, from going out from reasoning from mind and spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, is that the greater that controls the mental, that controls the physical. That enables us then to go forward. And have control over, to analyze, uncover, and annihilate those beliefs that don't want to go forward. So it isn't as easy as all that, just to know that when we come to a crisis period, all we have to do is to be willing to go forward. It's not that easy, because we have to handle it through science, by going out from the spiritual standpoint, from the reasoning, from that first translation. That's why the first translation always comes first. To appeal to the mind which is God is our mind. And let that mind of the first translation of the Emmanuel God with us reveal to us the goal that is trying to be brought out. And then let that mind guide and lead us into the promised land. We can only be guided and leaded into the promised land by the mind of Christ through the interpretation. That's why that first translation is first. The human can't get into the promised land. It has to come through the mind of Christ to make it established. So that's why that first translation is there. Interpretation from revelation. The only way we can make it out of Egypt, through the wilderness, into the promised land, is that we come out first from the first translation. First from the mind of Christ. First from Emmanuel. Let the mind which is God be with us. We can have no other mind than the mind which is God. With that standpoint, we come out of Egypt, through the wilderness, into the promised land safely. Do you see how these two translations go together and how important it is in practice? Think of when we're in the wilderness and we're relying on the moral or the human to get us out. Well, we're like Abel. The physical always kills Cain. The Cain always kills Abel. The flesh pots of Egypt always will kill the moral effort. The physical realm, the sensual realm, always will kill the moral effort to come out of sensuality, out of sensual reasoning. The Cain and Abel story says that on a moral effort, it's not possible. It isn't. How can we morally come out of sensuous reasoning? It's impossible. It only is when we go out from divine reasoning, from our origin, reasoning from God, from mind, from spirit, from soul, from principle, from life, from truth, from love, from interpretation, from revelation. It's only on that basis can we go forward. You see how these are wedded together and how practical it is for our life experience? What she means that we go forward from science or suffering. When we go forward from science, we go forward from the first translation, bringing us out through the retranslation. Suffering is the condemnation of Adam to till the ground, going out from the second translation and not the first translation. That's what she means by science or suffering. It's these translations. You go out from science when you go out from the first translation and in the attitude of the first translation, go out from the system of God, from your divine origin of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And let that standpoint take us out of Egypt, through the wilderness, into the promised land. The only standpoint that will do it. If we don't go out from the first translation and we go out from the second translation and try to reach the third degree of the promised land, then that won't make it. That is the suffering. That's the condemnation of Adam to till the ground. And we're usually cut off at the transitional stage. The physical usually always kills the moral, and it is just an effort until governed by science. Sure, from as they say, from the least of us to the greatest of them, they shall always know God. Eventually, all will come through understanding, through science, and science will lead everyone in the universe, including man, into the promised land through science and not through suffering. All right, so we just go ahead and pick our way through this interpretation of the second scriptural note. Very important. The kingdom of heaven is like unto a leaven. So we've seen that a leaven is as yeast changes the chemical property of meal. Therefore, the substance remains the same, but it changes form. Therefore, through these 3 degrees, from the physical through the mental and into the spiritual standpoint. And then again, the example of this chapter is to show then that how science remains science, but it goes through a leavening process. And that how theology remains theology, but it goes through a leavening process. And how medicine remains medicine, but it goes through a leavening process. Now we know that nobody likes a leavening process. The sciences both seem to be going through it quite nicely. It's that attitude of a scientist, really, to ask why, to seek the new. Sure, Thomas Kuhn gave us the book on the structure of scientific revolutions to show how a science goes forward through these degrees, as he felt them intuitively, that a science comes out of the first degree of a normal science through a crisis period into the third degree, so to speak, of an extraordinary science. And he shows that crisis periods that do go on, that second degree in a science, in which that anomaly comes up, that irregularity comes up in a science, which causes a crisis. But it's upon that irregularity that the extraordinary science is based. So this we know in the evolution of science, that certainly in Einstein was part of a revolution in science. He would look at Newton's theories and look at Newton's theories and build on them and build on them and build on them until he saw there was an irregularity in those theories concerning time. And so, therefore, it was upon that irregularity of time, that anomaly of time, that he built a whole new science. Now, we see then that Thomas Kuhn brings out how the scientists of the old paradigm of normal science, many of them don't want to go forward, so they resist the change. It only takes then the pioneer, that heretic, so to speak, who is willing to go to the scaffold, quote unquote, but take not back the words of truth. That is willing to go through the persecution and the losing of friends to stick up for the highest ideal so that a new science can come forward. The science, so we have that going on today. We have the new scientists today who are willing to go forward, willing to go into the new paradigm. In theology, well, we always have our heretics that are willing to go forward, so hopefully signs of movement will be going on within theology, out of the dead letter, out of mythology, into the higher order of divine theology, which Mrs. Eddy did, didn't she? She was that heretic, so to speak, which was really willing in our age of the 6,000-year period to go forward into a higher theology, as she was for science, and she also was willing to go forward and show that higher standpoint of medicine. So this is what I want to, that is not I want to bring, but what the textbook brings out then, that this leavening process is going on within science, theology, and medicine, causing it to change form and bringing out its original form, its divine form. And remember that as one goes from the first degree through the second degree, through the third degree, it's an attenuation of form, it's changing. Certainly just by saying one goes from a physical standpoint of science to a mental standpoint of science to a spiritual standpoint, we should be able to hear and see the form is changing. But that little example of a caterpillar going into its pupa, where it changes into a butterfly, certainly shows, is an example of a dramatic example of how that form dramatically changes through each stage. So we see then that we'd want to look at this leavening process. Mrs. Eddy shows us now in a positive sense. So what is that leaven in a positive sense? On 118.2, she shows, well, the spiritual leaven, that leavening, that is what? She says, the spiritual leaven signifies the science of Christ in its spiritual interpretation. We'll talk about it more when we come to that point of spirit as principle. But here we see then that the spiritual leaven is the science of Christ and its interpretation. It's the science of Christ and its interpretation, which is the leaven. See, again, the first translation is that leaven, the science of Christ, that knowledge that comes from God and its interpretation from Revelation. The first translation from the science of God and its interpretation. Now, that's the leaven which is causing the retranslation in science, in theology, and in medicine. And she shows that. And then she says, what is the false leaven? On 117.29, she shows the false leaven as Jesus bade his disciples beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, which he defined as human doctrines. So human doctrines are also at working in the world, aren't they? Leavening. Within their paradigms. We know that, and there certainly are causing changes going on. But that is that every doctrine within the physical, there are changes within the physical paradigm, but it can remain the physical paradigm. There are changes going on within the mental. But these are not the real leavening. They are changes which are going on they're happening, but they're not the spiritual change. They're changes just going on within their paradigm. And he even said, beware of them, almost as if there was a negative a connotation to the changes that the human doctrines would have on us. Then it goes on and says, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a leaven. Which a woman took. Well, it's again that virgin consciousness, that woman consciousness, that Mary consciousness, that pure consciousness that accepts, that welcomes the leavening process from God, welcomes the first translation. And so therefore the woman consciousness which welcomes the first translation, that doesn't resist it, that welcomes the new birth, welcomes going out from science, from mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, welcomes going out from the science of God, is willing to detach from preconceived pet opinions, and is willing to see things new in a new way. That's the woman, and she takes it. That it's only that consciousness which can then take and hide in three measures of meal. Well, that hidden is, since she says, is to hide is the Christ truth, which is hidden in sacred secrecy from the visible world. So the physical senses can't see this Christ truth, this leaven of truth, the science of God. It can only be perceived with spiritual understanding. So the woman took and hid in three measures of meal. So she hid, again positively, the three measures of meal. We see then on 118.13 is... in their spiritual significance, it's science, theology, and medicine. So she hid the true leaven in its true form. She hid the true meaning of the Christ and its spiritual interpretation in this concept of science, theology, and medicine. It's hidden in there. Hidden. Oh, we make up new words when we try to express ourselves, don't we? She has hid it in the true meaning of science, theology, and medicine, in that science and its spiritual interpretation is hid within the meaning, divine meaning of science, theology, and medicine, which includes spiritual laws. And that is as opposed to the measures of meal, which he shows on 118, 19, the three measures of meal, which are then negatively shown as three modes of mortal thought. Well, then that's false science, false theology, false medicine, or we would say a physical standpoint of science, a physical standpoint of theology, and a physical standpoint of medicine. Now, this was hidden, this true leaven, this kingdom of heaven, the leaven of heaven, the leaven of God, which is the science of Christ in its interpretation, that from the first translation, that Emmanuel, God with us, was hidden in these three measures of meal, in pure science, in pure theology, in pure medicine. It's hidden in there. It can only be seen by spiritual consciousness, the woman consciousness and spiritual understanding. And it's going to be hidden until the whole is leaven, until the leaven of spirit changes the whole of mortal thought. She shows it's going to be hidden on page 118:23. This continues until the leaven of spirit changes the whole of mortal thought, as yeast changes the chemical properties of meal. And then she says it will be hidden until the entire mass of error is destroyed, and so be glorified in man's spiritual freedom and perfection. So it's hidden. It isn't known to the world. That it's, as Jesus said, he walked over the water, not in it and of it. Therefore, again, that I keep coming back to the first night. It's so important. Men and women, are we willing to voice the higher order of science, even though it's hidden from the world in sacred secrecy, in true science, true theology, and true medicine, in through the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation? Are we willing to stay hidden from the world? Willing to be at work in divine science, hid with Christ in God in divine science, unknown to the world, pondering, praying, valuing those qualities of spirit, this science of Christ and its interpretation, till it becomes the tone of our consciousness, till it becomes our consciousness, till it becomes our very own being.